In southeast Oklahoma, the district incorporates a wide variety of technological tools to reach its 21st century student population. Central to those, the infusion of video technologies at all levels. Lance has been a speaker for both state and national conferences on technology integration, and he is the president of the Oklahoma Distance Learning Association, currently an adjunct faculty member at the University of Maine, Farmington, where he teaches a graduate course in technology integration for teachers. There's going to be a conference coming up in Milwaukee September 14, 15 at the Frontier Airlines Center, and it's a conference titled the PDS Technology Conference, Paragon Development Systems, a technology firm located in this Milwaukee area. Lance will be one of the speakers. We'll be welcoming phone calls, interested in hearing from those of you in the classroom about how you are using technology, or maybe you have problems with technology. We'd like to invite you to our conversation at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Hi, Lance. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, Kathleen. How are you today, ma'am?
I'm fine. How are you?
Just peachy for a Wednesday. Thanks for caring enough to ask.
You are welcome. You know, I think about this whole field, and it has, I'm sure, absolutely exploded in the past 20 years, because you think about how much has been invented, how much we have now that we just didn't have.
Yes, ma'am, and there has been such an evolution of the availability of tools in the classroom. It's almost mind-numbing as you look at where we were and where we are, and maybe even venture a guess as to where we might be in the future. The connectivity is now in place with the advent of programs that have been around for several years now. Things like the E-Rate program that have helped schools get connected to the Internet and helped offset some of those costs have put some great pipes in place for some amazing transformative technologies to be incorporated.
What is that? The what program? E-Rate?
E-Rate. You know it as your monthly phone bill. You see a charge on there from the Federal Universal Service Commission, and that is your USAC. That funds a pot of money called E-Rate, which helps provide connectivity for schools and libraries across our great nation.
Oh, that's interesting. I know you spent a lot of time in a very small district in southeast Oklahoma, 500 students, the population. Tell me what kinds of technological tools did you use, are being used in that rural area to connect that area with the rest of the world?
Excellent. So I'm actually in what was the superintendent's office right this second at that school, because even though my official job title is now a part of Cisco, they've left me here. I'm a true believer in, this is going to sound kind of crass, Kathleen, so forgive me, but I'm a true believer in eating my own dog food. So I'm not going to espouse to anyone that they should be attempting to do something unless I'm willing to do it myself. So I'm still here at the school, and we use a variety of technologies. Interactive video is one of the core technologies where a lot of things come off of that in the ancillary. Interactive video in the form of telepresence, where our students can connect with other students, our students can connect with subject matter experts. Our students can even create content and deliver it as instructors to other students across our nation. We have a laptop initiative where we leverage one-to-one laptop computing in many of the classrooms. Our classrooms are wirelessly connected so that even if a teacher may bring their own device into classroom, they may decide they want to use that device as a part of their instruction. Many, if not all, the classrooms have either an electronic whiteboard or some sort of projection device where they can project the images from the computers attached to the Internet in their classrooms. And it's all tied together via our state service provider. That is OneNet here in the state of Oklahoma. And they allow us to access the Internet with a very high-quality, high-speed connection.
And is this true state to state all over the country, or are we looking at inequalities?
Wow. It really depends on a state-by-state basis. Some states are further ahead than others, and some of the initiatives are focused differently than the one here in Oklahoma. For us, the OneNet initiative, you know, is focused on higher ed, K-12, and other entities, state entities here in our state, and interconnecting them via a high-speed network. But there is a national program, several national backbones, One of them is the National Lambda Rail, which is a research network, affectionately referred to as the NLR, where colleges and universities are interconnected for high-speed connections that enable high-definition video, all the way up to two-way interactive video at 1080p. It's absolutely amazing to see.
Yeah. I am wondering, let me go back for a moment here, because I'm of the generation who didn't have computers or anything when we went to school, and so we somehow missed any kind of instruction. When you're talking about teachers who may be a little bit older, or even, you know, this, with all of this technology coming on the market with such rapidity, do we know how to use all of this? I mean, are there places to go to school so you can learn how to use all of this phenomenal equipment?
Kathleen, you're driving at the heart of something that I get to work with every day. It's my privilege to work with teachers across the nation and around the world via video. And I come right into their classrooms. As soon as I'm done with you, I'll be headed up to New England via video to work with a college up there. And then I'll head out to Western Oklahoma via video again to work with a small school out there. You know, as I talk to teachers and as we explore the various use cases of technology, many times I find that age is not necessarily the factor. I'm 42 years old. My mom just retired this year and has gone back to working part-time. She's 73, and she uses various technology tools in her classroom. It's a matter of being a good teacher at the core of the experience and saying, who are these learners? How do they learn? What do they bring into our classrooms that we can leverage? And how do we meet them with tools that we can get comfortable with? For me, sometimes it's partially, at least, the student's responsibility to come to the plate and work with the instructor in sort of a democratic way in the educational delivery modality. No longer just rows and seats of sit there, listen, and occasionally I'll say, do you have any questions? Good, we're going on. But rather a democratic society in that classroom where teacher comes alongside student. Student is able to access their knowledge base, and they learn and grow together.
So tell me what's going to happen here. You're going to meet with people in New England, with teachers. You're going to be on a video. How's this going to happen? What are you going to teach them?
Excellent question. So what I'm going to do is they're going to come in with me via video to my office, where I have a high-definition camera, and I have my electronic whiteboard that I use to get online and show websites. I'll ask them if they've brought any sort of smart PDA, or maybe they have a laptop with them where they can get online, because part of instruction, especially under No Child Left Behind, dictates that we individualize and differentiate instruction. And when we're separated by a time zone and maybe as many as 1,800 miles, I've really got to reach to them individually, and that requires their use of the technology as well. So we'll be conversing back and forth. They will be seeing and hearing everything I do. I will be seeing and hearing them as they communicate back and forth with me. In fact, right now, I told your producer, I'm on a speakerphone because I'm used to talking via video, and my hands, I can't keep my hands still, and I'm gesturing like you can see me. It's really, really funny, Kathleen. But this is the way that I now communicate with everyone.
Well, you see, we get to just imagine you, so that's one of the miracles of radio.
That's better, probably, to be honest with you.
So tell me about the expense of the equipment for school districts. As you well know, a lot of districts have cut funds all over the country. Isn't all of this rather expensive?
Wow. Yes and no. The tools that we use in the classroom now range all the way down to a desktop video. So maybe a laptop or a portable media device, Android, this, that, or the other, that has the camera built in, can be leveraged as a part of this experience. There are a lot of tools that your listeners are very familiar with. Many of them may use them to communicate with friends and family around the world, things like Skype. There are a lot of tools that are out there now that can be leveraged to do this. Now, we can take that all the way up to an immersive experience where you truly feel like when you sit down or walk into the environment that that person is life-size, that that person is physically in the room with you. We've all seen tools used on television and newscasts where the video was not quite as clean as maybe what we're used to in broadcast mechanisms. Those are some of the lower-end kinds of tools. But on the upper end of the spectrum, Kathleen, I'm telling you, it As scary as it sounds, they will see me in 1080 today via video on the public internet.
Isn't that something? And what about this Skype? How new is that technology?
Well, you know, Skype's been around for several years now, and Skype recently was acquired, the company themselves, I believe, by Microsoft. And again, this is one of those where does the future go from here kind of things.
Right.
But Skype has been featured on a lot of different venues. I know that Oprah has used Skype as a part of her processes. If you look at CNN or Fox News, they're using a variety of interactive IP video tools depending on the quality and what they're trying to accomplish. And that's what I would say to your listeners to start off with, especially those of you who are educators. You know, as a former educator slash person who is now responsible for teaching graduate courses, there are a lot of people with a lot of expertise around our nation, and it's so powerful to be able to have them impact your classroom, whether you're dealing with traditional K-12 students, traditional higher ed age students, or even adult learners. To be able to lean on those external adults, to learn on those professionals, and have them come into the class via video can really add a new dimension to the processes.
Oh, no doubt about that. And are teachers taking advantage of this, or is this still a field that's waiting to be explored?
Yes, ma'am. Many teachers are taking advantage of this. Your listeners, hopefully, as they're listening to us today, they may be able to get online as well. I'd like to mention just a couple of websites where you guys can find some things that teachers are doing. One of those is in Indianapolis. It's the Center for Interactive Learning and Collaboration.
Center for Interactive Learning and Collaboration.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
It's the CILC, and they are a .org, CILC.org. As you go to that website, if you're listening today and you're doing that, you will see right on the front page there are several different opportunities. The very first link that you see there is Content Provider Programs. These are places like the Smithsonian, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the Moat Marine Laboratory in Sarasota, Florida, the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, all coming via interactive two-way video to classrooms and working with the teacher and the students around the curriculum the teachers have been tasked with teaching. You'll also see their academic classes and collaborations where students are working on amazing projects in their classrooms, and simultaneously students maybe halfway around the world are conducting similar science experiments, or maybe they're comparing their results. Or today I got an email asking for a partner for a mock trial. So really taking the great things teachers do and lifting them to another level by incorporating interactive video.
Well, that sounds pretty exciting.
It really is to watch it happen. You know, Kathleen, I am at a school district, like you mentioned, of around 500 students, pre-K to 12. 80-some-odd percent of our students qualify for the federal free and reduced lunch program, so I'm in a high-poverty area. To be able to have these students exposed and have them stand and deliver the content that they are learning to others provides them, in my eye, a leg up on what will be their competition tomorrow for those scholarships. And beyond those scholarships, their competition in a global marketplace.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls, and here's how you get a hold of us. Lance Ford is our guest. Professor Ford is an educational technology advocate for Cisco. He served as a teacher and technology facilitator coordinator for Howe Public Schools in Howe, Oklahoma. He's joining us by phone from Oklahoma right now. It's a rural district, high poverty school district in southeast Oklahoma, which has been able, because of the technology in the classroom, to really branch and collaborate with people all over the world, which is true for a lot of districts that are using advanced technology to connect learners with other people, other institutions beyond the school walls. As somebody who is in the classroom, what do you think about all of this technology? How do you use technology in your classrooms? Do you find that you know what you're doing? I'm at that state where there's a lot of equipment that maybe it's just you get used to using certain things, and it's kind of hard. I just find it really hard to learn how to use some of this, even the stupid cell phone. I hate to admit it, but I know the basics. I finally learned how to text, but we all need to be up to speed on this, don't we? Because that's the world right now, and There's no formal way to do that. Well, we'd like to hear from you. How are you using in a wonderful way technology in the classroom? Do you think it's a blessing? Do you think it's a curse? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome your phone calls, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Dan in Stevens Point is our first caller for Professor Lance Ford. Hi, Dan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Great program. I'm calling to see if your guest uses Moodle in the classroom. I work for university in Stevens Point at the LEAF program, and I'm charged with, which is a K-12 forestry education program for the state of Wisconsin. And one of the things I'm charged with is taking care of the Moodle site and trying to get teachers to connect. And I'm just wondering if your guest uses that.
What is Moodle, Dan?
Moodle stands for a modular object oriented dynamic learning environment. And so it's a place where you can put out different resources for teachers, and you can share and collaborate with teachers, and also teachers can put out their lessons, you know, basically for a whole entire unit, for a whole entire semester. They can put lessons, interactive video, pictures, anything that might support their learning. They can put quizzes out there, pretty much anything that you would normally give out in a class or want to show in a class. It's sort of a storage place, and then you can also collaborate with other teachers. And so what I do is the forestry education program that's the university at Stevens Point runs, I will be putting everything out there to share with teachers statewide for environmental education, K-12, forestry education, K-12.
Lance?
Absolutely, Dan. That is the way that I individualize my delivery, especially in my grad course. You know, when I was working on my PhD, I was working on it through the University of Oklahoma, and they used Desire to Learn for their LMS, their learning management system. And Dan, as you're well aware, Moodle is a very powerful tool for a couple of reasons. Number one, the price is right. Right?
Free.
It is open source, which means that you download and set that server up yourself. You can host it. Now, if you decide you don't want to do that, there are places that will host Moodle rooms for you. But, Kathleen, if you think of it sort of as if you take an online course from a college or university, they're going to use a web portal to kind of make that happen. Moodle is the open source version of that. And, yes, sir, I do. In fact, if you're online right this second, my Moodle portal is at T4, dot LanceFord, LanceFord, dot net. That will bring you to the front end of my Moodle portal that I use, and you will see that I try to blend the online portion with the live portion. Off to the left-hand side, you'll see recordings that were made as a part of presentations and classes that I've delivered. And so all of those things meld together for me, Dan, in one blended environment. It's no longer live versus online. The two tools are used simultaneously.
And do you have any suggestions for, I'm going to take a look at that shortly here, do you have any suggestions for how you get people? One of the things that I need to do in this position, and I think a lot of people probably are in this similar position, so it could benefit from your comments, how do you get people, how do you drive people to your site? Right now what I'm trying to do is set up, you know, a Facebook and Twitter, you know, basically a social media marketing campaign to get people out there, but I'm not sure if that's, I know it's probably not the only way, I'm not sure if it's even the best, and so any suggestions you have on that would be great.
That can be difficult, Dan, and I think you're going down one of the right roads with social media. Kathleen mentioned earlier sort of a transition period that we're in between teachers who may not be as comfortable with the social media aspect as those who are. And I find, for me personally, Dan, interactive video and the relationships that we can foster using that tool, they are willing to go to the site once they have seen and we have talked together, and it becomes an outgrowth of that rather than the initial thrust of the information. There are a lot of successful models out there that are doing exactly the thing you're doing, posting things out there. They're tweeting about it. They're putting it on Facebook. They're creating large social networks and driving some success with that. It's always, though, in my mind, Dan, the relationship that grows it beyond the initial infatuation with the technology. Whether that is a social media relationship or, I hate to use the word old school here, so forgive me, but more of a personal relationship, which I might add many of our students are missing, in my opinion, today because of the hours and hours they spend with a keyboard in their hands.
Right, yeah.
You do some you do the interactive, like you're going to do today, you said, in New England, right? You'll be talking to them live, not in person, but live. And so that's one way you build that relationship. And what do you use for that? Do you use Skype, like you were saying?
Well, I use a tool that is a software-hardware combination tool from Cisco. It's a part of a suite of tools in their telepresence line that I'd be glad to talk to you about sometime. And Kathleen, at the end of this, if we want to do some information exchange, we can. I'm good with that. But there are other tools. Skype is there, and it is certainly an option for people who may not be able to access the high-definition 1080p style quality. But there are a lot of things out there that you can use to make video happen. And to me, it's that being able to read the body language of the individual. I jokingly a minute ago said to Kathleen, I'm gesturing to the phone like you can see me. I'm still doing that, Dan. I'm sorry. But it is that relationship, in my mind, that fosters the ongoing commitment to come back to a Moodle or come back to a social media site where we can continue to pool expertise.
Okay, great. So I'll listen off the air, let other people get on, but I'll look forward to any information exchange that you can do at the end of the program and try to get in touch with you that way.
Absolutely, Dan. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. What about the students? What do they think of all of this new technology? Do they take to it? Are they excited about it?
You know, it's funny that you'd ask that because I have a 12-year-old daughter and a 10-year-old son that go to school here. My wife is the part-time gifted and talented coordinator, part-time library media specialist at our district. I hate to say it's old hat, but it is. They are so used to using the tools that it hasn't been much of a learning curve. I think what they enjoy most is being able to creatively express themselves using the tool. And what I mean by that is many times we as teachers find ourselves disseminating information as a part of instructional time. And there is definitely a need to do that with 21st century learners. But what my daughter and son lack, in my opinion, is the ability many times to synthesize and process things, problem solve them. They know they can find information. Now, Kathleen, if I didn't learn anything else from my PhD, ma'am, I learned how to take a five-minute response and turn it into 25, and I'm sorry about that. But I have to tell you this anecdotal story. Is that okay?
Of course.
Okay, so my daughter, last year, she's wrapping up sixth grade. It's springtime. It's about April, so her mind is checking out and going to different locations. She did not pay attention in math class. I know it's hard to believe that a 12-year-old didn't pay attention, but she didn't. She comes home that evening with a worksheet. There's about 40 problems that she needs to accomplish. Part of it's online, but part of it's print. She didn't ask me, even though she hadn't paid attention. She didn't ask her mother, who has a master's degree in library information. Instead, Kathleen, she got online, went to Google, and typed in, how do you calculate the area of a circle? Now, in 10 minutes, she completed the first half of those 40 problems.
Whew.
She then goes back to Google, and she types in, how do you calculate the circumference of a circle? Again, 10 minutes elapse, and she's completed those last problems. She then turns to me and says, Daddy, can you help me by grading this? And in my best teacher voice, Kathleen, I said something to the effect of, no, you should be able to take your answer, work backwards through your problem to determine whether or not it's correct. Her response to me was something to the effect of, Daddy, you can't Google that. Now, what I learned from that little exchange is that my daughter's going to find the information when she's darn good and ready, if it's the facts that she needs, and probably with about 95 to 98% accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
However, what she really lacks is how to solve the problem and apply what she's learning. Mm-hmm. So if we can use the technologies to grow us in that direction as educators, now we're reaching 21st century learners with 21st century tools.
Right, right. Let's go to Janet in Janesville. Hi, Janet.
Delighted to take part in this discussion. I would like your guests to comment on something that's happening in Wisconsin, and maybe I think it's happening nationwide, and that is that we are losing the very person in our schools, the library media specialist, who collaborates with teachers to enable us to tackle the technology questions and integrate the technology and address the standards, the information literacy standards. We're losing librarians like crazy, right when we're on the cusp of change. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Janet.
Absolutely, Janet, and there is nothing more near and dear to my heart than this conversation because I live with one, and you are absolutely right. Even here in our great state of Oklahoma, there has been some legislation because of budget constraints that have removed some of the former mandates to have the library media specialist as an integral part of that experience. Whether it's for the teacher or for the student, I mean, I would even broaden that out and go further and say for the community at large, our library media specialists play an integral role of interconnecting all the tools. To be able to say, you know, my wife may not know how to specifically dive into all the advanced features of a particular piece of software. But this morning, Kathleen, she called me. It was about 5 minutes after eight. She had the sophomore class coming into the library. She said, Lance, I can't find the little piece of technology that I need to project my laptop up onto the projector screen. So I went running over there, found it, got it plugged in. She sent me a text that said, you were the hero, which gave me that warm feeling inside. But your caller, Janet, is absolutely right. We have got to prioritize the process of really validating information sources. Because you don't know me from Adam. I could be anybody. You can look me up online. You can find my credentials online. But I could have put a whole lot of things out there that may not be absolutely true. It is the library media specialist that helps us filter through those things, that helps the students make informed decisions about the process. It's the library media specialist that, as Janet said, reaches to that faculty and says, hey, here's what you're teaching. Here's what's on that high-stakes test. Here are the things you're pushing towards. Here are the tools that we now have access to. Can I help you in that process? And then for our adult learners, being in a community like I am, having access to GED opportunities and resources through not only our local library at the school, but our regional library system is very, very paramount to success. Janet, you are preaching to the choir, ma'am.
We had a long conversation yesterday about bullying, and the subject of cell phones came up for whatever reason in the process of the conversation, and a teacher called in, a substitute teacher, who was talking about the number of kids who carry cell phones in their pockets, and that schools have policies that you got to relinquish those, but a lot of students don't do that. Are cell phones used in any way? Can they be used in any way that is constructive in the classroom? Are they a part of the new technology?
Wow, that is a can of worms, Kathleen. And I jokingly tell teachers I work with, I'm politically incorrect, but I'm 100% honest. So here we go. We do allow cell phone use on our campus for specific classroom projects. For instance, we may be in a geography class, and we may be talking about different things that are specific to our region. We may ask students to step outside. I mean, I'm looking outside the window at a very forested type of area. There is some erosion going on the side of the hill, so maybe in the science class they're talking about that phenomenon. Students are asked to go out and document that with the phones. Maybe they're pictures that they're taking. Maybe they're taking notes using those smartphone devices. We use some online resources. Your listeners may be familiar with an online polling service called Poll Everywhere, where you can use standard text messaging to administer polls. The first 30 responses are absolutely free, and that usually will cover a class. many times when I'm giving a presentation, I may ask my folks out in the audience to I'll provide a question, and I'll say, hey, would you text in a response? We're live via video, so as those responses are coming in, they're populating a video wall behind me, and I'm using those responses to feed back into that virtual classroom
I see.
For me.
Mm-hmm.
Cyberbullying, utilizing social media tools, can be a real problem. I would never want to say that I want to ignore that or sweep that under the rug. But as we can use tools that students have access to meet them, maybe not even halfway, but to meet them somewhere along the way in their learning and allow them to provide some expertise back in, that's what we want to be busy about. And on a side note, you know, budgets, we talked about this a moment ago, budgets are really constrained. And as bad as we may not like to admit it, I think one of the possible solutions is a BYOD environment. Not that every student will be able to bring their own device, but if they have devices that we can leverage as a part of this, what are we doing spending all our resources just procuring more and more technology that simply duplicates technology that they may have in their back pocket already?
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that's another can of worms, and you may have a listener that decides to call in and talk about that. But that's the way we approach it here.
Yeah. And getting at a little bit of what Dan was discussing earlier, what about finding out what all is available? How do you know about the, you know, aquarium in Florida that's doing something with dolphins and communication, and that's a part of your science class and you want to connect with that? How do you find out, because there is so much available, what's available?
It becomes overwhelming.
Yes,
I mean,
it does.
I'll shoot it straight with you. It really does become overwhelming when you look at these things. There are specific communities of interest. You know, there's an ISTE, International Society of Technology Educators, has a great organization that is very, what I would call, vertically focused, if we were using a business model, with different curricular areas being the different verticals, and how technology can come to be a part of those different curricular areas. They have an annual meeting. They have a great website, a lot of research-based publications that deal directly with various technology uses specific to curricular areas. And that would definitely be one organization that I would point you to, ISTE, I-S-T-E.
I-S-T-E.
Yes, ma'am. It's just iste.org.
Okay, good. We're talking about technology in the classroom this hour of the program, and our guest is going to be at a conference coming up September 14, 15 at Frontier Airlines Center. It's the PDS Technology Conference, free to business leaders and IT pros. You can register at pdspc.com. PDS is Paragon Development Systems, a technology firm that's located here in the Milwaukee area. Our guest has a really interesting background. He is an educational technology advocate for Cisco, and he was a teacher and technology facilitator coordinator for the Howell Public Schools in Howell, Oklahoma, a rural district in the southeast part of the state with a student population of 500 students. And they incorporate all kinds of technological tools to reach the 21st century student population. Lance has been a speaker for state and national conferences on technology integration. He is the president of the Oklahoma Distance Learning Association, a member of ISTE and ASCD. He's an adjunct faculty member at the University of Maine, Farmingham, teaching a graduate course in technology integration for teachers. So we're also welcoming you to join the conversation as somebody who is in the classroom. What kind of technology do you use? Do you find that your technical skills are lacking and that you'd like to do more, but you may not have the skill to do this immediately and need to get up to speed, or B, maybe there are no funds available for this? What do you think of it as a movement? Some have said the best instruction is just a terrific teacher and a willing student. Is that ignoring what technology can bring to the classroom and really make it an international experience in some ways? We'd like to hear from you. Our number is 800- 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, the author of Out of the Vinyl Deeps, remember vinyl records? Ellen Willis will join us. Her book is on rock music. In 1968, The New Yorker hired her as its first popular music critic. Her column ran for 7 years and established her as a leader in cultural commentary and a pioneer in the otherwise male-dominated field of rock criticism. This is a collection of, for the first time, her Rock Etc. columns and other writings about popular music, claiming her rightful place in rock music criticism. Should be a fun show tomorrow at 10. 800-486-8655 is our number, and our email is talk@wpr.org. Let's take an email here before we go back to phone calls from Eric in Madison. While the power of the internet is unlimited, do you find that children should be learning more human interaction and communication skills? I feel that part of our society's problem is that we have a huge disconnect to our fellow neighbor and feel that our constant need to force technology into the classroom compounds our inability to communicate face to face.
That's a great point, Eric, and that's what I'm leaning on when I talk about interactive video. Interactive video at the core of the experience builds that relationship. You can read. Yesterday I was working with teachers in Maine, and it's their back to school, their back to school training time, and so I had a group of teachers for a couple of hours, and what we did was we started in the first hour with a lot of just information. They were able to get online, find some things, and then we really kind of drilled down in that second hour to say, all right, you know who I am, you know the relationship, we've had some conversation here. If you'd really like to foster this relationship further, why don't you stick around? Everybody else who may not be interested in having this conversation any longer, why don't you head on to your classrooms and get the work done that you need to? But the folks who'd like to hang out and dive deeper, let's have that relational conversation that is exactly what you're suggesting, pulling people back together. I find that when video can be a part of this, we can overcome a whole lot of those social awkward moments. I'm a big proponent of stand and deliver education, and what I mean by that is I feel like students are going to be able to get the information. We can find it, we can research it, we can validate it, but can you synthesize it? Can you engage other groups of people verbally in a way that is meaningful? So video plays a crucial part in that, and Kathleen, just sort of as a follow-up, I've heard you mention the PDS conference a couple of times. Again, it's going to be one of those opportunities for me to eat my own dog food. I'm going to be live there, but I will be via high-definition video to that conference. So physically, I will not be on-site, but I will be live via interactive two-way video as a part of that experience.
Well, that's interesting.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Are you the same on video as you are in person?
To me, I am. I really enjoy being on video more, and I'll tell you why. I've already mentioned my children. My daughter's 12. My son is 10. But she's involved in softball tournaments this week. She's a softball player. He's a baseball player. He had a ball game last night. There is no way, Kathleen, that I can be in Milwaukee for a 1 p.m. presentation and be home in time to see my kids play ball and be a part of their lives. Interactive video allows me to work in Maine in the morning, in Midwest during the midday, and in California in the evening, and then go have dinner with my family and go to the ball game. So video for me has allowed me to do some things that there's no other way I could do them.
I understand. I understand the importance of the ball games, too. Believe you me. I got it. Boots, is that your name from Milwaukee?
It is, or most people know me as such. So I teach piano and guitar in the Milwaukee area, and I private lessons. I go into people's houses. And one of the things I do is I give my students a list of guitarists or pianists from many different styles, and I tell them to search the YouTube for it. And not only do that, but put in piano lesson you know, than the name of their song or guitar lesson. And there's 10,000 people from around the world. Some of them are good at teaching. Some of them are not. But we can sit down together, and any questions they have for the screen, they can ask me. So it's not a, don't, aren't I afraid I'm going to lose my job to all of these awesome guitar and piano teachers on the Internet. It's a supplement to it. And it's been helpful with the students that put effort into getting online and searching out the songs they want to learn.
Right.
And I can create exercises based on the songs and the chord progressions of the songs they're interested in.
Well, that's interesting.
Great use of the technology, Boots. It was Boots, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Boots, my background, I'm a former high school show choir teacher slash assistant band director for 10 years of my life. And so I'm loving what you're doing here. And that many times that concept is one of the concepts that we look at in education using technology, and I refer to it as flipping the instruction. The ability for students to find content online in video or maybe text format where they can get the information, and then when they come to work with the instructor, it's the application. It's no longer just the dissemination when you're live with the student. One great example of this is the Khan Academy. Are you familiar at all with the Khan Academy?
I'm not, no.
Okay. It's a website, khanacademy.org. It is now funded by the Bill, partially funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Now,
it's a great website of all kinds of
many different things, not just musical, right?
Right, right.
Oh, I am familiar with it. I was guiding a student in chemistry,
yes,
and the periodic table, and I watched some of the videos to help me to help them.
Absolutely. And as teachers are looking at sites like this, you know, I really truly believe that your model that you've implemented is where we've got to go with these learners. Look, my daughter can sit down, my son can sit down and watch a 5-minute, this is how to determine the area of a circle kind of video from a place like the Khan Academy. Then when they get into class the next day, let the teacher do what you're doing. Help them with the questions. Be the voice. Be the answers. Be the application. And let's use our live instruction time to be lively. Okay, as opposed to just dumping information out there.
I have, I tell people that technology isn't unnatural. We as human beings naturally manipulate the world around us. So the things that we create are natural. I have lots of arguments with people about that. But it's not something to be afraid of. It's something to look at and use as tools and to not forget that they're tools that help us educate ourselves, balance imagination with science, and learn about the mysteries of the universe.
You're absolutely right, and it's helping us propagate it at a much more rapid pace. You know, the textbook that was printed that's in my child's hand right now was printed 5, maybe even as many as 7 years ago, and some of that data is no longer even correct. But if we can use a valid source, we talked about our library media specialists earlier, if we can use a validated source to get up-to-date information and allow our students to become learners of learning, then we can truly impact our world moving forward. And technology, you're right, Boots, is just a tool. There's not one silver bullet, but there are a lot of different tools that teachers can access to make those changes happen.
Thanks, Boots, for your call. Brandon in Sussex. Hi, Brandon.
Hi. Actually, I'm kind of surprised. First-time caller, your program's actually been a very good treat for me lately. I had wanted to comment. There's been a lot of talk of this event called the Singularity, and it's when the intelligence of, or artificial intelligence meets that of, and actually may surpass that of human ingenuity, intelligence, whatever. Is that, with the progression of the current progression of technology within our schools, I mean, within our jobs or economy, is that of concern to anyone? I mean, are we, maybe I'm a conspiracy theorist, but I mean, do you think eventually we will be replacing teachers completely with like physical teachers with, say, just a video monitor or something else?
Brandon, my personal opinion is that and 50 cents will get you a cup of coffee at McDonald's, okay? My personal opinion is that the human factor is going to always outweigh the AI factor. Yes, AI is an amazing advanced application of technology where we can see some beginnings of problem solving by the artificial intelligence area. However, there are still humans who are an integral part of this process. I thought I was going to be God's gift to education for my daughter one time, and she asked me a question, and I pointed her to a website as a part of the answer. And part of that answer actually was a video clip. And her response to me was, well, Daddy, that's nice, but A, that's not the way we learned it in my class, and B, that person's not my teacher.
Okay.
And so there is still that human connection with the individual that is leveraging this. I just don't believe that we're going to see a full replacement, a wholehearted replacement of warm-bodied teachers who are good teachers, okay, with technology. I'm glad we're running out of time here, Kathleen, because I'm about to open a big can of worms. I always ponder the question with teachers, well, is this just putting teachers out of work? I mean, you're offering classes via video. Is that putting a teacher somewhere out of work? You know, for us, the answer is no. We would not be able to hire as many faculty as necessary to do all the classes we might like to do if we were responsible for the salary of each warm-bodied person. But we're looking for the best of the best to work with our students and be able to bring them in whatever modality. Maybe it's a warm body, maybe it's via interactive video, maybe it's an online, solely online kind of offering. But we are looking for the best of the best to work with the students. And I think that as teachers move forward into the 21st century and these tools become more accessible, man, we're going to all have to step up our game, is the way I would say it.
Okay. I guess call me a bit of a traditionalist, at least in this current decade, but I want to comment that I do find the way some of the way technology is progressing. I mean, even in high school, I graduated from Brookfield Central about 5 years ago now, and even since then, it's all smart boards for each classroom as opposed to traditional, like, chalk. So it's amazing how things are going.
Yes, it is. Thanks, Brandon.
Yep.
Thanks for your call. Here's an email from Gina. I have several children in the Superior School District, and I'm able to log on to a portal called PowerSchool. This enables me to track my children's homework, email their teachers with any questions, and talk every night about what's going on in each classroom. This tool has been a vital tool to bridging the gap between teachers, students, and parents. It is really wonderful.
Absolutely. Gina, we use PowerSchool here at our little school, and it is absolutely wonderful because she knows what every parent faces around the dinner table at night. Johnny, what'd you do in school today? Nothing.
Exactly.
And you know that's not true. You know they have been working diligently, and their teachers have created great lessons, and they've been engaging. But if that's the communication, wow, parents can just be left out in the dark. So a portal like PowerSchool, and there are lots of others, that allow parents to check in on the process via they're looking at those grades and looking at those assignments and verifying that there is a line of communication open between the parent and the teacher, and it's a great tool.
Thanks for the email. We go next to Karen in Monona. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I guess I really want to segue from there and say that, you know, the responsibility for the communication is on the parent. It's not on the child to come up with a great, vast quantity of information. I guess for me, I was into technology when my son was very young. I encouraged it. Everybody was boo-hooing it, and he turned out to be an engineer. So now even I find some resistance to it. I was one of the first people to take a laptop into commission meetings and take minutes that way. Everybody, you know, now everybody does that as a standard of care. And I'm an older person. I take my device everywhere with me. It helps me with my lists, with my integration of information. I can go out online, but I've been a techie for 30 years.
Yes, goodness. Ma'am.
And I do see it going in the direction of everybody having bring your own device. And so the burden really is on the parent to communicate with the children, to develop that conversation, to go online and get the information. And I guess what I want to say about video is that it doesn't eliminate teachers. What it does is it allows us to reach a vast larger quantity of individuals with mm-hmm. information, and hopefully that sparks conversation between those individuals.
Yeah, thank you, Karen, for the call. We have less than a minute left. I know you wanted to give some information. First, we should talk about the conference, September 14, 15 at Frontier Airlines Center, and a special note, if there are teachers, educators who handle IT for their schools, they can attend, of course, for free, and it's the website is www.pdspc.com. You had briefly some other information you wanted to share?
Sure, Kathleen. I mean, it's really easy to get a hold of me. I'm Lan, L-A-N, Ford, F-O-R-D, at Cisco.com. And if you had a question or maybe you want to continue the conversation, man, I would love to have the opportunity to do that. Please feel free to shoot me an email or anything that you may have, Kathleen, that comes in you want to forward to me. I'll be glad to deal with that as well.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. And thanks, everybody, for your participation in our conversation with Lance Ford. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. We have news coming up and great conversations ahead, so stay right where you are. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 9 o'clock on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.